Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to For Men About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Your weekly journey through all things fermented.
My name is Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're your co-hosts today on episode 152 of For Men About It. Mary is unable to be with us. She this is an all-volunteer program. We donate our time, and she's stuck at the day job doing her thing, which is great because it allows us to do what we do. So we're thank you, Mary, for working hard so that we can have fun here on For Men About It. What's that, Rachel?
I don't have a day job, so I can.
So you can be here. So as a proxy, we have Rachel Jacobs. Rachel, we've never actually talked about who you are and what you are and where you come from. Would you mind if we did that now? I'm going to put you on the spot because you've been really fun and really great to have, and I think we'd like to hear some stories behind that voice. Is that all right?
Sure. I'll just do a little bit of a TLDR, I guess, the short side of the story. So I went to college for graphic design, and then I got into publishing. I was working in that for about 3 years, and I was miserable for about the last year of it, and I was kind of like, what am I doing? and then, like any person at like an office job, I got really into listening to NPR and radio, and I was like, well, why don't I go do this? So I quit, and I haven't looked back.
That's awesome.
And now I'm working here and doing some podcasting. I'm hoping to launch a podcast soon in March, or I'll let you know when that happens.
Please do. Please keep us posted, and thank you. Thank you so much for everything. Hey, we are in the middle of New York City Beer Week right now. This is the 8th annual Beer Week. We did skip a year, so by annual I mean pretty much annual, except for that 1 year.
That ominous one year
of transition.
We don't talk about that yet.
That's right. A giant transition where the New York City Brewers Guild was formed and took over the organization of New York City Beer Week. It has grown tremendously. The events are just awesome. They're all great. We had an event on Saturday on a boat, and a beer festival on a boat. It was really a lot of fun, and went out, hung out by the Statue of Liberty for a couple hours, and then went back, and then we did it again, two sessions, and it was just awesome. You know, for a while we were looking for a place that felt like New York City. We did it at Vanderbilt Hall, which is part of Grand Central Station, 2 years ago, and we've been trying to find something that kind of felt that New York again. And I gotta say, you know, the boat was the right. It was kind of a ghetto boat, but it.
Was it that boat?
We're brewers,
that
what we could
out
afford.
Of like 46th Street.
This one left from. Well, we boarded the boat in Red Hook, and then Pier 36 at South Street Seaport is where everybody else joined us, or the guests joined us there. Putted around and had a great time tasting a lot of really great flavors in on a really beautiful day in the middle of February. It was unreal. It was so beautiful.
It's kind of scary.
It was scary. You know, those could go anyway. Anyway, there's more stuff happening. Tomorrow, Brewpiphany at Kelso Brewing Company on 529 Waverly from 7 to 10. On Wednesday is Brewer's Choice, right next to Kelso Brewing Company. Tickets are still available for that. And then Thursday night, everything's happening. NYCBeerWeek.com. There are still tickets to an event that I'm throwing with Joshua M. Bernstein and Tyson Ho at Arrogant Swine called Winter's Grind. It's basically sausages from 10 sausage makers, homebrew from 10 homebrewers, and pro brew from 15 plus pro brewers, and we're very excited about that. And on Sunday, closing it all off, rounding it all out. Oh, also that Saturday is a cask festival in the city. The New York City Brewers Guild has joined up with the New York State Brewers Association, as well as the people behind Get Real Presents, and there are tickets to that as well. If you go to nycbeerweek.com, there are two sessions, one in the afternoon and one in the evening. As far as Winter's Grind, to find some stuff about that, more information about that, joshuambernstein.com. And Sunday, closing it all out, we're going to Greenpoint Beer and Ales, formerly known as Dirk the Norseman, to have a beer festival or like, you know, taste through a bunch of beers from people who are both pro and Joe, representing the home brewing community in New York City. So if all the pro beers have been made by persons who are either still part of one of the local homebrew clubs or can't make the clubs anymore because they're so busy with the business of beer, but it's all related, and a bunch of people representing the current clubs.
And if you are fatigued by New York Beer Week, or if you haven't gotten tickets to anything, tomorrow night I will be hosting a trivia night, Harry Potter trivia at
yes.
Bar Halliards, and the prize is a pitcher of their lovely house porter. I don't remember who makes it. I think
what?
It might be Greenpoint.
Oh, good. Well, hey, it's at least keep it in the city.
So, yeah, you should come to that.
So I argue that is part of New York City Beer Week. Every week is New York City Beer Week, and we're happy with this. But this particular week is School Spirit Week, and that's where we are. Speaking of School Spirit, there's somebody I've known. Speaking of Gowanus, that's right, you're doing that in Gowanus. Go, go,
nice.
Go Gowanus. Go, go, Gowanus, we call it
go,
now.
Go, go,
at least St. Gambrinus says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
In Gowanus, there is one of New York City's newest breweries, and an old friend of ours. You may remember this gentleman from episode 87 of Foment About It on Heritage Radio Network. Jason Saylor.
Hi. How's it going?
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
You sound like you wanted to answer the question, how are you? How
I
are
did,
you?
Yeah.
Okay,
no,
how are
I just,
you?
I'm jumping so far ahead in the interview. It's you know.
Yeah.
It's just, we're back and forth, you know, so it's good. So,
well, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a good beer week so far. It's been a good year so far.
Yeah.
So it's all around been pretty amazing to get a brewery launched in Brooklyn and New York.
Congratulations. The last time you were on, you were still looking for a place?
Yeah, what was that, 2014, I believe,
yeah.
Last time I was on. So it's come a long way since then. officially found a spot at 574 President Street between 3rd and 4th Ave in Gowanus.
What's a train stop?
The Union stop on the R, right around the corner from Awaka, and not far from Whole Foods, and Threes is down the, you know, a couple blocks, other half's a 20-minute walk. So we're in like a nice little beer area.
And yeah. Pickle Shack and Mission Dolores and also Rock Shop.
Yes, I mean, I can keep going. Yeah,
we don't need to name every place.
We could just keep, it could be like an hour of just like naming restaurants and bars around the area.
Well, first of all, what is the name of your brewery?
Well, I guess that would probably help, wouldn't it, too? Yeah. So the name is Strong Rope Brewery. We are a New York State farm brewery that is focused on using all New York ingredients, hops and malts, as well as botanicals and other ingredients. Right now we're about 100%, we're 100% New York hops and about 95% New York malts.
That is awesome.
Yeah, trying to push the you know, kind of New York boundary. You know, I know a lot of farm breweries out there right now, and kind of differing levels of what people are actually using. And you know, I'm from Rochester, New York. I lived in Syracuse for a little bit. Spent a lot of time in the Adirondacks. Lived in Brooklyn for 11 years now. So. You know, I'm New York through and through, and really want to try to kind of push the entire state and everything that we have going on and the beers that we make.
And the state is kind of just getting back into making making products for our agriculture. The state's been very good with that stuff. To put this in perspective, how big is your brewery?
Yeah, so we're really small right now. We're a two-barrel brewery. We actually got most of our equipment from Rockaway Brewing Company as they upgraded. We also purchased some equipment from Transmitter as they upgraded. So we're just kind of taking everything that Long Island City is getting rid of. So, yeah.
Gowanus is the new Long Island City.
At least Strong Rope is. So we're making 4 kegs at a time. You know, it allows us as a farm brewery to reach that kind of level of what we're doing without those ingredients. Not every brewery that wants to do New York State ingredients can reach that level, just because they're bigger. But one of the benefits of what we're doing now is just getting off is pushing it to the forefront for us is that we can grow with these farms and the maltsters and everyone that's producing so that, you know, as we grow and they grow, we can grow together and we can, you know, kind of feed off each other. We can say what we'd like, what we don't like, what works, what doesn't work. And they can be like, okay, you know, what are you actually looking for that we can produce rather than just blindly producing, and then hoping someone takes their product. You know, we can be a soundboard or a launching pad for them in terms of what they're making
in real time.
In real time. Yeah.
So you, I'd be remiss not to say that this is kind of a warm up to a show tomorrow, Beer Sessions Radio, talking with Andrea Stanley, who we've had her on the show before, and we've talked about her. She did a great thing and helped start one of the founding members of the American Craft Maltsters Association, right? Is that the name of it? Something like that?
No,
now I feel listen bad. Listen to Beer Sessions Tuesday night at 5 p.m.
No, but Andrea and Christian from Valley Malt are definitely some of the people are the kind of the ones responsible or at least partially responsible for getting New York, at least New York malting, back into the forefront, or Northeast malting, I should say. They're technically in Massachusetts,
right. But
they use a lot of New York farmers. But they've been instrumental in really reintroducing malts and grain agriculture for brewing back into New York. It was, you know, pre-prohibition. There was quite a bit of acreage put over to the side for grain as well as hops for brewers. But, you know, with that, with other issues and, you know, things moved out west, cheaper land. There were blight issues in the eastern states. So they kind of moved out west, and it's just starting to come back. So it's a very young industry, a very young a group of people that are really trying to bring it back to the forefront. But they're doing some awesome things. But, you know, again, they're young, so there's growing pains, and there's growing pains for us as brewers trying to, you know, us new brewers trying to utilize those grains and utilize those hops and making sure that we're getting the best product out there.
What is a farm brewery license? What does it mean to you?
So the farm brewery license, it was introduced in 2012 just to kind of reintroduce the brewing agriculture back into the state. They've also done farm distilling license and farm winery license, and it's just been, you know, it creates a great opportunity for farmers and producers to kind of reintroduce new or reintroduce things that were done a while ago and create these things. So right now, New York farm breweries need to use about, it's 20% New York hops and it's 20% other ingredients, which pretty much boils down to malts. You know, so it's a way to get people involved with working with those producers directly and really kind of developing a relationship that not necessarily is there if you are working with farms out west. I mean, you might be able to meet them every once in a while, but it's not something I can, you know, just call or even go visit readily if I wanted to do that with farms in Yakima or Willamette or wherever. Here, I can go up to the Finger Lakes or go up outside of Rochester or go up to central New York, Hudson Valley, Long Island. Like, I can go there and, like, meet with them directly and develop this relationship that I think is important just to, you know, because for me, I make beer. I am the face that most people see when they drink strong rope beer. But I am, you know, the end kind of product of a long line of people working to make unique ingredients that go into it. So with the malt and the hops and anything else that we put in there, there are a lot of really hardworking people that are not getting the kind of recognition and their dues at the end point. So I really want to kind of push that and let people know about all the different farms that we work with, like Willett Hops and Whipple Brothers and Weathertop. We're going to have, we had Pioneer Malt in from Rochester the other day to do a little roundtable discussion. And we're doing the same thing with Weathertop and Willett and Tiny Field Farms, which is actually a small rooftop hop farm in the city.
Wow.
This Thursday to talk about this stuff and to give them a voice and something that, you know, people can see, okay, these are the people that are actually behind the ingredients that we use to make the beer that you are enjoying.
Can we go to strongropebrewery.com to find out more information?
You can go to strongropebrewery.com and go to the events page to find exactly what we're talking about. Yeah.
And this is the first, you were saying before, that this is the first of several panels that you'd like to do throughout the year or continuing education.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. This is not as, you know, it's not a just a, for me, it's not just a beer week thing. This is a, right. This is something that I want to continually do. It's, you know, it's not just for this year. It's not just the first year that we're getting off. It's just, I want people to constantly know that you, like, we'll have things going on that will introduce consumers of strong rope beer to the people that are behind it. Not just me, but the maltsters and the hop farmers and the fruit farmers, everybody else that is putting in the time and effort into making the ingredients that we're putting into our beer are getting the recognition. So it's a, you know, yeah.
So. There's a really great quote there's a saying that Randy Mosher puts in his book Tasting Beer.
Mm.
And before we go to break, shout it out again because I love it. I love saying it all. But he says that because of the interrelationship between the terroir and grapes, it is said that God, however you define it, I'm not a very religious guy, but God, however you define it, makes wine. Mm. But man makes beer. Mm. All those choices and all the people involved in that and all the, and the brewer. With every sip, you're taking it's a glimpse into the soul of the brewer who made it. But there is a lot of people that went into making that.
I mean, it's an intensive product, not just the brewing, but everything else that comes behind it. And that's well said.
Beer is people. We're going to take a quick break. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are here in studio with Jason Saylor of Strong Rope Brewery.
Hi.
Standing in for Marianne with us. Actually, not even standing in. You're part
I'm
of us now. You're
in,
with
actually.
It. You're with us. Come on. Rachel Jacobs. And Jaren's over there smiling. He's a great guy. He's got a face for radio, I tell you. That guy, I love that guy. He's a photographer, but you'd see very few pictures of him. Anyway, Jason Saylor, let's talk about some of the flavors of the New York malts that you've learned. What kind of beers have you made in... When did Strong Rope open? When did you start producing?
So Strong Rope, we started producing beer November 25th of last year, 2015. We officially opened our doors December 17th of last year. So we're really 2 months old.
But yeah. Two barrels So yeah. You're making a lot of...
We're making a lot of two barrels, seven fermenters, so we're on batch 30 already. So,
yeah.
We're cruising through and... But the beer that we make is very focused on... we use one yeast strain for all of our beers. It's a Scottish ale strain. So it gives a very clean ferment so that we can really let the hops and the malts be the showcase of what we're trying to do. So most of our beers tend to be more kind of, if you want to call it, American and English in variety. There's not a ton of yeast character coming through. It's really more of a workhorse. And letting those malts and those hops kind of shine so that we can showcase different beers. Right now we're tasting, we have a whole series of beers. Our Falling Squirrel Project is a series of single malt, single hop smash beers. So each one, it continuously changes. So we're on batch 8 of that whole series. And what we're tasting right now is Cascade from Willet Hop. And it's Niagara malts, a mild pale malt. and then, we worked with Chuck Rhodes from Willet Hop to really get, kind of talk to him about what they're getting and what they're seeing from their hops. And Bob Johnson from Niagara Malt. And that's kind of going back to what I really love about the whole working with New York farmers is that, I can do that. I can text Chuck and be like, hey, I'm getting these flavors. Is this what you're seeing?
Right.
What are you thinking? If I have any questions on the properties of the oil content or the acid content or anything of the hops, and we can discuss that. So they're and that's the kind of partnership level that I think is allowing us as a farm brewery and just pushing that farm brewery idea to its level is kind of really one of the my favorite benefits of that is just creating these relationships that we're working with.
For a second, Valley Malt was one of the only maltsters in this in this region, which is why it was a really great. It's a really great asset to have Andrea doing that. And but now, how many maltsters are in New York State?
I think there's about 8 or 9, either fully in production or coming online soon. So within, Valley Malt, I think started 6 years ago, something like that. I'll have to ask them tomorrow.
I'm gonna say six.
Six, yeah. Within the last 2 years, people are just popping up. East Coast Malt, Pioneer, Queen City, Niagara, Hudson Valley. There's just tons of malt places or malt houses that are just jumping into the scene. And, I think with that same thought of all these, we have now 4,000 breweries in the U.S., over 4,000 breweries, and we have 9 malt houses in New York. There's a lot of people jumping in, and it's just important that the quality kind of stays paramount. And, hopefully everyone's taking the time and effort to kind of learn what needs to be done to produce quality products. While also kind of keeping that line of dialogue open. So if I'm, it's great that there's all these products. There's over 250 acres of hop farms in the state right now. Tons of acres of barley and wheat being produced for the malt houses. But a lot of, they're still young. They're still figuring things out. Mm-hmm. So there are things sometimes when it gets out, it's not necessarily the best quality. And, talking to other brewers, that's what I really see is the issue. They want to make sure that they're getting a quality product so that they're using. Because they're not necessarily all in. They use a lot of other, products that have been tested over the time.
Right.
and making great stuff. And then when they use New York ingredients, if they're only using periodically, they're only seeing a small portion. And if something is wrong, it might turn them off. And that's right. not good. So we got to make sure that what, you know, we're getting to these brewers is high quality. But at the same time, the brewers need to be responsive to the producers. So if they're getting something that's not right, tell them why it's not right, or tell them what you're what they're
right.
seeing.
Right.
What is wrong? Are you is there levels are there issues with the beta glucans or the protein levels, or are they not getting great efficiency? Like, tell them what you're seeing and talk through it. So that you can get, you know, create a better product all around.
Yep.
And as I said before, that's easier when they're in New York State.
Exactly. Like, and you know, it's easier when everyone's small at this point. You know, it's kind of hard if someone's a very big and you're seeing it, you don't necessarily, as a small brewer, I don't necessarily have a say when it comes to other bigger malting or hop companies. I could be like, hey, I'm not quite enjoying this, and you know,
but like being a farm brewery allows you to kind of develop relationships between all the people who give you the ingredients, giving us the consumer kind of the best possible product.
Right.
So another thing about farm brewing is that you get to brew seasonally. So can you tell us about some of the seasonal brews you might have?
Yeah, so I mean, our first kind of seasonal didn't really kind of come up as a seasonal, but it was a dark wheat beer. So we were playing with just kind of the idea of a wheat beer that was dark. Not, you know, again, we're using one yeast, so we're not getting a lot of those major yeast characteristics. But it was just a way for us to kind of introduce something that was a good idea for, you know, kind of the winter times, though the winter didn't really ever come. But, you know,
last week.
Yeah.
It was there for three days, sat with no heat. I promise you it was there.
As things progress into the warmer months, we'll start playing with fruits and herbs. We've done basil raspberry brown ales. We've done sour cherry imperial stouts with cocoa nibs aged in whiskey barrels. We've done lavender and blackberry blonde ales. I take a lot of that inspiration from culinary kind of finds. I go and have a dessert, or I go and have something that, you know, they're putting on, and seeing these combinations that these chefs and these restaurants are putting together, I'm like, oh, that's an amazing, you know, kind of thought that I would maybe never thought of. And, you know, because they're playing with these combinations, I feel a lot more than sometimes brewers are. So it constantly changes. So we'll have, I mean, strawberry rhubarb blondes or imperial something or other. You know, it's just, yeah, we'll play around. So as it comes in, but again, we're playing with New York farms. So it really depends on what is growing well that season. We've had years when things didn't grow well. You know, there was more rain throughout the state than there normally is, so the strawberries didn't grow well, so we didn't have strawberries or something like that. So we'll kind of really play with what is available, what's tasting great. So we'll constantly go to the farmers markets around the city and work with the farmers and you know, kind of make some really interesting seasonal beers.
Oh, I'm really excited to taste some of those, that strawberry basil one.
Yeah.
You have to go to Strong Rope to have that for the most part, right? Most of your all your production is designed for that being doomed.
Well, yeah, a two barrel. I mean, since we're a small brewery, the whole idea that we wanted to do behind Strong Rope was to create a place where kind of like your old breweries, where every neighborhood had brewery. And now the tap room was where you got that beer. You would go and you would try and you would interact with customers. So, you know, like I like to interact with the farmers, I go the exact same way when I interact with the people that are drinking our beers. I like to be there. I like to serve. I like to talk to them, see what they're liking, see what they're not liking. You know, really have an interactive relationship with the people on both sides of the beer. So in that, you know, we're doing most, you know, probably 99% of our beer through the tap room. We have 10 taps online. We have 9 of our own beers and I guess cider. Not everyone drinks beer, and cider's good. So mm-hmm. We like to showcase that. We have Descendant Cider on quite a bit. Awestruck, we're keeping an eye out and going to be, you know, looking for more. So if you're a cidery and you're looking for a place to sell...
Farm cider.
I'm not a cidery.
Farm
cider.
You're a New York State farm cider.
New York State, correct.
That's what allows you to serve the cider,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Do you know how many farm brewery licenses there are in the state?
Oh, that's a good question.
Just curious. Curious how many.
I don't remember off the top of my head. No.
Do you know if there's a list at the New York State Brewers Association of who's a farm brewery or not? I don't either, but I think that it's important for the consumer to know because, like Michael Pollan says, when you're going to buy food at the grocery store, you're casting a vote. Every dollar you spend is casting a vote. Mm-hmm. The relationship that Jason is establishing with these maltsters and with the agriculture in New York, that's only going to survive if you cast your vote for farm right. products. So I'm not saying drink only farm brewery products, and I'm not saying you should live at Strong Rope, but you probably could and should.
I mean, we can set up a cot.
I could probably live at Strong Rope.
I mean, I think I have a hammock over there too, so we can.
But I think that these are really fun and really great things, and I think that it has to be supported. The experimentation has to be has to be supported through consumer dollar and experiments. One of the things that we've done is the New York City Brewers Guild this year, and last year too, is to do a New York State Malt and State Hop project to kind of shine light on this very thing.
Yeah.
And so there's a 10 or 12 beers out there right now as part of this year's Beer Week. See, I'm throwing it all in. Beer week.
Yeah, beer week. I didn't know.
Find those smash beers. We're taking the other meaning for smash for state malt and state hops. Some delicious and fun stuff there that really like makes the state shine. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah,
that's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, I'm really excited that there's some hop growers on rooftops in Manhattan now.
Oh yeah, Tiny Field. They're not in Manhattan. They're shoot. I believe they're on the Pfizer building.
Oh, yeah.
In
yes.
Brooklyn.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. And
I did hear about
that.
You know, come Thursday to the brewery and find out all that and more.
Oh.
They're, as far as I know, probably the only people producing hops on a rooftop. There might be small things, but they're kind of pushing. Their last year was their first year. Keeley and Katarina. Sorry, that's right. Yes, I think
it is. What to say?
Sorry,
yeah.
Katarina.
Okay. And I just think it's fascinating. It's going to be a great, you know, because we have two farmers. We have one or two other farmers from New York, one from kind of central New York and one from western New York that are coming down. So the three of them are going to be on this panel. The three groups of them are going to be on this panel, and we're going to talk, about New York State agriculture, but to really see the difference and the similarities and everything that those are having between, you know, regular, I guess we want to call it regular farming, hop farms in, you know, the ground versus these hop farms in the sky. and I think it's just a fascinating thing. And I think it's an important thing as, you know, the world becomes more urbanized. And, you know, you go up to a tall building anywhere in the city and you look down, there's so much wasted space on these roofs. And it's something... There needs to be more you know, I'm going to get on my sustainability rant right now, but there's going to be more. There needs to be, farms and energy. There's so much unused space that it's just it's wasting real estate. And there could be some fantastic things like hop farms, which, you know, helps me. So.
Yeah.
So unfortunately weren't able to get their, you know, we came after kind of they had gotten, their hops had taken. Yeah. So next year we're definitely going to work with them and have, some of their beer, or some of our beer with their hops.
That's good. That'll be year three. So that's good for you.
Yeah.
Speaking of hops and hop strains and what you've noticed so far, like last year I used some New York State Cascade and I used it again recently. But this year's was different than last year's. But both of them were very different from what I know Cascade to be or what I think of as Cascade. So I feel like this is a place where terroir expresses itself for a little bit or not even, or just like circumstance. Or do you think that we're dealing with younger products and that the strain will eventually kind of even out and we'll get more of the grapefruity kind of Cascade thing? And along with that, if it's tasting differently on this coast, should we call it a different hop even though it's technically the same hop?
Well, I was just actually reading something about
this is that. For the panel on Thursday.
I mean, someone was making a good point that if you get Chardonnay grapes from Chardonnay Valley, France, right? Chardonnay Valley versus Chardonnay grapes in California.
Sure.
Are you getting different flavors? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still calling it Chardonnay. So if you're getting Cascade hops from the West Coast versus Cascade hops from the East Coast, and my you know, they're going to be different. My thought before was maybe it should be named something different. But maybe you just regionalize it and you say, okay, Cascade, New York Cascade is going to be slightly different than West Coast Cascade. Because it's still the same strain. It still has the same genetic makeup. It's still all this other stuff, but you're getting unique aromatic and flavor profiles and acid levels and everything else. The terroir, your growing conditions are going to adjust things. It's not going to be the same. It's just not going to be because you can get Cascades. You could get probably the same rhizomes sent to a farm in the Hudson Valley to Finger Lakes and Long Island, and you're going to get three different products. They're just going to have, you know, different soil compositions and, growing conditions and everything. So, you know, I kind of was on that, like, okay, maybe they should be called something different, but I'm kind of leaning against that now, and I think, you know, we just say it's a New York Cascade. I mean, you can regionalize it. You can say people know that if they're getting a Chardonnay from California, it's a Chardonnay from California versus Chardonnay from, you know, France. So, and I think that actually creates a unique proposition for beer drinkers. Like, oh, you know what? I really like these. If you start calling something different, then they'll be like, you know, then you start getting, okay, well, I want these, you know, whatever, New York hops that were Cascade, but then we changed the name because
then
they're like, oh, I want to have these New York hops. And then you start growing them in Michigan or you start growing them in the West Coast. And it's like, I think, you know, because they are the same plant just grown in different areas, then they should be called the same. If you want to grow something different, crossbreed, do everything else that is done to create these different genetic variations of hops with all the new hops coming out, you know, go through, Cornell or University of Vermont or Hartwick College, because they're helping, they all have programs to kind of work with growers for these things in creating unique, or at least understanding the properties of what they're growing.
Yep, I fully agree. I'm glad we had this talk.
Thank you.
I'm excited about your panel on Thursday. I'm sorry I can't go. I have other Beer Week stuff, but I look forward to the rest of the seminars throughout the year. Yeah. I'm going to stay. I'm going to be watching StrongRopeBrewery.com events page all the time for
I'm
stuff.
I'm going to be like heading over there a lot because I live in Gowanus.
Rachel, there you go. You mean go Gowanus?
Go Gowanus.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
You told me to sing when I came on here.
I did. I wanted you to sing every answer to the questions.
Sing every answer.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So, yeah, it's too late now. So
it was.
You
it really
you
was.
Missed your show.
Let's redo
pieces.
It. All right. Take
we'll,
two.
We'll do a Simpsons episode later. but without a lynch mob. You don't like those.
No.
Okay.
Hey, even if they sing.
It has been great hanging with you all tonight. Thanks for listening to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We got a lot of some fun stuff coming up, but don't forget to enjoy the rest of your Beer Week, New York City Beer Week. Remember, inebriation is not a destination point. It is a perk for those with good taste.
Shout out to my friend Jason, who grows hops in Gowanus.
What?
Foment About It.
Foment About It.
Yourself a hurricane running through your brain, driving you crazy, all for no campaign, like a red-eyed wild stallion.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.